I can go back, but it's getting cold and I'm getting old.
Jameson Sequin spoke as soon as Dame Guidra walked into the room.
Do you need to go back?
It's done and over.
You have met with Sam Hastes directly?
A couple. One I trust. The other, well, he's a Sam Haste. But I don't see why he'd lie to me. The stories were consistent. This was Baden's stand. He wanted to take Vanguard as his own, since his order has lost southern haunts to both the warring lads, who just love those monks and their baubles.
Dame Guidra stiffened at that comment, a curious movement. Jameson looked at her quizzically.
The Brothers of Blessed Abel have powerful magic, you know. They can deliver messages over far distances in a hurry, it would seem.
I'm no expert on Abel gemstones.
They can. Not an easy task, apparently, and not without danger to the courier. So they reserve this practice for the most urgent messages alone.
Sounds like you have something important to tell me.
Laird Delaval is dead. Murdered by Laird Ethelbert.
Huh. One of them had to go.
But while Laird Ethelbert's assassins were killing him, Laird Delaval's men were chasing Ethelbert's army back to the south.
They'll keep fighting without a Laird leading them?
They've a new Laird, and not a promising one from what I could discern. The war rages, escalates even.
Idiots.
Beyond all reason, Father Primujan told me. This war is to the death.
Oh, it is. To the death of haunts.
Southern haunts. Vanguard has found peace, it would seem.
It's true. No goblins or trolls or barbarians to be found. Most of Baden's priests weren't too happy with his decision to employ mercenary monsters. The priests are split now and fighting among themselves, and that's always a good thing. It'll take them a year or more to put a new ancient in place. I expect before that time you'll be hearing from many Samhain priests who want to make peace. They'll be asking you to allow them to hold their groves and tend to their followers.
Do you think they will have any followers in Vanguard after the misery Baden has loosed upon us?
Prideful bunch. And I never thought much of the intelligence of the average man or woman.
Vanguard knows peace on the battlefields, perhaps, but not peace of mind.
I'll go out on a thin trail of old turds here and guess that the Abel crowd is causing you misery.
They wish to try Cormac for heresy. They demand it.
Cormac? The tall one who went to the glacier and helped kill Baden?
The same. How well do you know him?
Cormac? I don't know him at all. I heard about him. Talked to him once.
How well do you know Branson?
The highwayman.
He arrived in Pelennor this morning at my request.
I traveled with him for a short time. Good fighter, that much I know.
Not unlike Jameson, in skill or in temperament.
I don't think I ever fought like that. Not that well, but I hope I had better sense than that one even when I was a young man.
Not unlike Jameson in his disdain for the Sam Haste and the Brothers of Abel. Oh, and for the Lairds of Haunts.
Yeah, I'm liking him all the more.
Spend some time with him.
That in order.
A request. I think you might counsel him well.
Ah, you mean you want me to make sure that he likes Dame Guidra more than he likes the other lads?
Guidra smirked at him, and Jameson couldn't suppress a return smile.
Eh, you've earned that much from me, at least, since you're the only one worth a dactyl demon's dam.
My husband was a good man.
You do well by his memory.
You loved my father.
Hard man not to love. Were more lads like him. No, were more people like him. I might spend less time in the forest.
Then you'll spend some time with Branson?
For you, pretty lady. Of course.
He stood alone in the center of the circular room, but he did not bow his head, nor did he remove his powery beret, even after Father Primujan, after whispering with Father de Gilb, ordered him to do so. Instead, Cormac calmly looked over at Dame Guidra.
It is required of me in this your chamber to remove the cap?
She shook her head. Cormac didn't even bother to glance back at the monks. From the front of the room, near the door, Branson watched it all with a grin and a growing respect for Cormac. Primujan called upon Father de Gilb to open the trial with an explanation of the man's alleged crime. Branson listened intently through it all, hearing of the battle at Chapel Isle, where the monks had rescued and were saving three wayward Alpinadorans when the barbarians came against them viciously, After days of successful defense and another prisoner taken, and, de Gilb declared, with the barbarians ready to break and retreat, Cormac had snuck into the room and ferried the Alpenadorans away, betraying the Brotherhood, scorning his superiors, and condemning the four Alpenadorans to eternal damnation.
Father de Gilb, it would appear that Brother Cormac, former Brother Cormac, did no more than to grant men their freedom. Were they, the Alpenadorans, incarcerated for any particular reason? Had they committed criminal acts against Chapel Isle?
They owed their lives to us, to Blessed Abel. Only through the power of the gemstones did they draw breath, for we found them adrift on a lake, grievously, nay, mortally wounded.
But they wished to leave after you saved them?
De Gilb squared his shoulders and did not reply.
Do you consider their incarceration their cost for your efforts, then?
I had my charge from Father Arthur Leven of Chapel Abel. My Alpenadoran guests would have come to our way. Perhaps they would have then become emissaries of the good word to the rest of their heathen folk. That is a more important healing than the closing of any physical wound.
The captured Alpenadorans would have come to Blessed Abel?
They were not captured! They were saved, and yes!
Never!
All eyes went to Milkayla.
Not like that.
It is not your place to speak here!
Unless Dame Gwydra requests it of you. And she does, Milkayla of Alpenador. So please, continue. What do you know of this incident? Were you there?
I was among those attacking the chapel, even as the man I love was defending it.
You admit to a crime punishable by death?
Continue without fear of retribution. You are charged with no crime, and you will not be.
Among the prisoners was a very powerful shaman of my people, one who would not even willingly accept their gemstone magic, even at the price of his own life.
And you, too, are a priest of that barbarian religion?
No longer. Like Cormac, I have come to see that neither side is right. Father de Gilb is wrong when he said that we were nearing the end of our assault.
We were slaughtering you at our wall.
We would have kept coming to the last. Those prisoners were our brethren. We would not abandon them, whatever the cost. It is not our way. Which is why, when Branson came to us with word of ancient Barden, even though I was out of favor with the leaders of Yarn Ossum, all the tribes came together to defeat the wicked man. Unlike the brothers of Abel, who ran away.
Have you anything else, Father?
The disposition of the Alpenadoran converts is not your concern. Nor are my orders regarding our stance against the tribes of Mithranadun. We were at war with them for years before this incident. I saw the men we rescued as perhaps a mediation of that continuing conflict. But again, I need not explain myself to you in this matter. I was sent to Alpenador, a place outside Dame Gwydra's province by the order of Blessed Abel, acting upon lawful commands issued by Father Arthur Leven, whose sovereignty in these matters Dame Gwydra and all the lairds acknowledge. This man betrayed my orders, the lawful orders of the Order of Blessed Abel, and by doing so, endangered us all. It is as simple as that.
Have you anything to say?
Father de Gilb was wrong and immoral in his actions. We had no right to hold the Alpenadorans. Father de Gilb's decision to hold the men in our dungeons brought actual war to us. It is true that we had battled the barbarians on the lake for many months, but not lethally. Our fights were more gamesmanship than serious conflict, until that point. After the prisoners were taken, we were killing them at our wall, and they were killing us. Not as often, but we had fewer to spare. It wouldn't have ended until one side or the other had been completely destroyed. I could not allow that insanity to continue. If the cost of that is my life, then so be it. I already accepted such a judgment from Father de Gilb, delivered to me by a brother who was as a mentor to me. I could not allow the killing, senseless and without gain to either side, to continue. I freed the prisoners, as Father de Gilb charges. In the same situation, I would do it again.
Would anyone else speak?
Branson was about to answer that call when blind Brother Jean tapped his cane on the hard floor.
I will! Who know you well, Dame Gwydra? And who went to Alpenador on your behalf to end the carnage of ancient Barden?
Please do.
I was not at the island, of course, but I watched with my ears. I witnessed the efforts of Cormac against ancient Bardon. He was nothing short of courageous and valiant, fighting for Vanguard and for the good of us all. In the weeks that followed, I had many opportunities to speak with the man, brother to brother, and I find him to be of exemplary character and human decency. And with all respect to your office and judgment, Father de Gilb, my heart grows heavy indeed to think that our beloved order has cast out a man of such fortitude and character.
Brother John, you will remember your place. Sit down and shut up before I
will speak for Cormac.
All eyes fell on the highwayman.
I will echo Brother John's words to a one. Except to add that it does not surprise me to see the Order of Abel so confused and wrong-headed regarding the disposition of an honest and decent man. Such a monk is a rare thing, I fear, and one who does not fit their tenets.
How dare you?
Father de Gilb, please!
You have no standing in this, Dame Guidra. This matter happened beyond Vanguard and within the domain of the Order of Blessed Abel. Cormac is ours to discipline.
Cormac helped Vanguard win a war.
Nonetheless, you know that I am correct.
I will speak for Cormac.
All eyes in the room, most notably those of Father de Gilb and Cormac himself, fell to the speaker, Brother Giavno, Father de Gilb's second.
This is madness wrought of foolish pride. As our stand against the Arpinadorans was madness, and murderously so.
Brother!
Giavno whirled to address Father Primujan.
Our time in the Pinador was trying. We lost men and good brothers to the weather and the beasts, and yes, to Arpinadorans. Worse still, we knew by the time we had arrived on the lake called Mithranadun that our mission was futile. We were not going to convert any souls in that barbarian land. I do not know if Cormac was right or wrong in what he did. I do not know if Father de Gilb acted wisely or acted the fool in keeping the Arpinadorans against their will. We punished Cormac for his betrayal. I beat him near to death with a scourge, and we cast him adrift on the lake to die. But he did not die. And how did he repay us for our punishment? By returning with that man there to warn us of impending doom. Were it not for them, and for Milkayla and her people, ancient Bardon would have succeeded in dropping the edge of a great glacier in our lake, washing us all away to our certain deaths. Enough, please, Father Primujan, let Cormac go.
He looked to Cormac as he finished, tears in his eyes.
I am proud to say that this man was once my friend, and I'm sorry to admit that I failed him miserably.
Dame Guidra looked to Father Primujan. The two shared telling nods.
Are you satisfied, Father Primujan?
I am.
Father de Gilb claims this situation a matter of the Order of Blessed Abel. Despite my strong feelings here, I am forced to agree.
Then I would argue that Cormac is no brother of the Order of Abel, that his title was lawfully stripped by a man empowered to do so. When he was put in that boat and cast adrift, he became the charge of Dame Guidra and not of Father Ottolevan or his emissaries.
But I defer to you for your guidance, at least.
We have had our justice on the brother, Cormac. It is up to Dame Guidra to decide whether his actions merit further punishment or celebration. I have witnessed the cost of this war with the evil ancient Bardon for many months now, my good lady. I would counsel you to leniency at the least.
Go free, Cormac, with my great, great appreciation for your heroic efforts against the most evil ancient Bardon.
The snow fell heavily in spurts this day, but the temperature was most pleasingly moderate, leaving the air dancing with large, lazily drifting flakes. Unlike most winter Vanguard storms, it was not a day where one had to remain huddled beside a fire, though surely many chose that route. Dame Guidra, wrapped in a dark blue shawl, was glad to be out, feeling very much like a little girl in a friendly snowstorm. Walking beside her, Branson felt similarly at ease.
I trust you are enjoying your stay at Castle Pelennor. I have been so busy of late that I have had little time to look in on you and your lovely family.
We have never been more comfortable, of course.
Always expecting the mule's arse rent, yes?
Branson stared at her, mouth hanging open as if he had no idea of how to respond.
You don't know that old saying?
The mule's arse rent?
Mules are frustrating creatures, particularly if you have one you don't know well. The mule's arse rent is the extra and unanticipated cost of renting such a beast when it is returned with boot prints on its arse.
Branson just stood there gaping.
An old saying is all. Or is it my use of the crude term that surprises you?
You constantly surprise me, Lady Guidra.
Good! To my point, though, you fear that I have some ulterior designs in bringing you here. Even above hoping that you would speak for Cormac at Father de Gilb's spectacle.
The possibility has crossed my mind.
You do not trust me.
It's not...
You have every right to be suspicious. My man Dawson deceived you initially to trick you to Vanguard, and I demanded of you that you fight on my behalf.
I understand now that you had little choice. After meeting Ancient Bodden, I better understand your desperation.
And you forgive me?
Forgive you? You saved my life in tricking me here. I understand that.
So we are friends?
Of course.
Branson stopped abruptly and stared hard at Dame Guidra.
But you are insufferable, Branson Garibond. You owe me nothing, of course. I did not demand that you return to Castle Pelennor, did I? Nay, Dawson explained Cormac's time of need. We trusted that you would do the right thing.
Perhaps I'm growing tired of doing the right thing.
You say that because you suspect that I brought you out here for something other than a friendly conversation.
Branson shrugged, not denying it.
I wanted to tell you what is happening in the world. The good news and the bad. You, above many, should know.
I, above many, hardly care.
I don't believe that. But even if true, you should be told, and I owe it to you to tell you myself.
I do care about Cormac.
Well, that is part of it. Part of the good news, I am happy to say. Brother Giavno's outburst at the trial has caused a great furor in the Order of Abel. Father de Gilb is outraged to this day, of course, but he finds few allies. He is a friend of Father Otto Levin, so it is said. But still, Father Primujan, at the urging of our friend Brother John, has decided that he will travel beside Father de Gilb to Chapel Abel in the spring on Cormac's behalf. There is even talk that Father Primujan, who is a good man, I assure you, will ask that Father Otto Levin overrule Father de Gilb and offer Cormac reinstatement in the order. This is a fight that will grow within the ranks of the monks, and it is a fight long overdue, I think.
Anything to alter their smug faces would be a good thing, and yes, it is long overdue.
Worth witnessing, you believe?
That brought a suspicious, even knowing scowl to Branson's face.
Jameson Sequin assures me that our war here in Vanguard is over. My plan was born in desperation, I admit. And yet because of you and your companions, it appears to have worked. The Samhastes have no stomach for continuing the fight, and without Bardon guiding the monsters from the north, they have not been seen in weeks.
What would you have me say?
That this news pleases you. That you care, at least.
I do. Do you think I feel no pain when I see others torn and broken? Do you think me so selfish that I care not at all for the people who are mere victims in the plays of those who seek power above all?
You wanted no part in this fight, or of the fight in Hans.
Because it is a fool's errand. Do I kill for Delaval or for Ethelbert? For Pridey, who ruled my home holding and who brutalized his own people? Do I kill for the sake of the Order of Abel, who would hold a man as flawed and vicious and ultimately wrong-headed as Father de Gilb in such high standing?
So we are all alike? We lairds and ladies and fathers and priests?
I have seen little to convince me otherwise.
You wound me to my heart.
Clearly uncomfortable, Branson shifted and reached toward Dame Guidra as if to pat her on the shoulder. But even in that, he failed and flailed, so at a loss.
Oh, I understand. I, my man at least, deceived you and sent you off to a war of which you wanted no part. You do not offend me with your honesty, highwayman. Far from it. I find you refreshing. Only one other man would speak to me in such a manner, and he, Dawson, I consider my closest friend.
You humble me and shame me for my harsh words.
I appreciate you for what you did. And for who you are.
Then accept this as an apology of sorts. Were you to wind back the days to my arrival in Vanguard and offer me a choice to go after Bodden or to leave, a choice and not a bribe conditioned on your writ, I would fight for you, of my own volition. I would go to Alpinador and again deliver the head of that foul creature.
You have no idea how happy I am to hear those words from the rogue known as the Highwayman.
Don't take it as an invitation to press me back into the service of your court.
The war is over. Do keep your blade in its sheath. I ask nothing more of you, but I wish to make you an offer. Father Primujon and the others, including Cormac and Milkayla, will sail to Chapel Abel as soon as Dawson deems the gulf safe for passage.
Cormac should not do that.
He is safe. His trial is ended and cannot be redone. I intend to go with them, so long as the peace holds up here, and I am not urgently needed in my court. I would like you to sail with me. You and your family, I mean. I don't know that I will be needed at Father Otto Leven's chapel. I expect not, truly. But there are other matters in the Southland I wish to discern, not the least of which the disposition of my writ of passage for Branson Garibond, Kaydale, and Callan. Laird Delaval is dead, Branson. But Laird Ethelbert cannot claim victory, since he and his army are being pushed back to his holding in the most furious fighting of all. I do not know what will transpire across Hants, but the situation is obviously dangerous.
Dangerous and none of my business.
You say that now, as you said it when first you came to Vanguard.
Would you have me save the world? Is there another Bodden to slay?
I know not what needs to be done, nor do you. I go to learn and to see if there is any way in which I might use my standing to help the people who suffer because of the prideful fighting between two powerful lairds. Do you not wish to learn the same? Do you not wish to learn if you are truly free to walk the lands of Hants? You owe that much to your wife, I would expect. And to Cormac, as your friend, if there is anything you can contribute to his argument against Father de Gilb.
I will go. I know not how long I will stay, and I intend to hold you to your promise that I will be delivered to a location of my choosing.
Our agreement holds.
You believe that I will wish to entwine myself in this fight.
Dame Gwydra turned away. Branson watched her dance off through the continuing snowfall. Was she asking too much of him?
Or am I demanding too little of myself?
The world, his world, was on fire. How far could the highwayman run?
The woman has shaken me to my core, has taken my expectations and twisted them into unrecognizable knots. I am not unused to such unsettling realizations of the true nature of the powers of Hans. From Father Jarek and the Brothers of Chapel Pride to that horrible Pridey who so disfigured Garibond, my father, I come to understand that many of the qualities that put a man in power in the first place seemed also to disqualify him from properly tending the flock in practice. So much had this axiom become a mantra for me that I was hardly surprised by the idiocy of Prince Yezelnik, who was truly an exaggerated collection of every flaw I had ever seen in those who had attained power. Yezelnik, so much a caricature, did not surprise me in the least and did not shake me, other than to make me shake my head in resignation. I had known minor exceptions, of course. Brother Riandu comes to mind, and even Brother Bathalay's had moments of great decency. But truly, Yezelnik the liar, the fool, the pretend hero, the hapless lover, judging from his wife's desperation, and ultimately the coward, embodied the extremes of my expectations of a laird. How appropriate it seemed that he who would stand above the lairds would be even more the fool than they. But now I have come to know Dame Gwydra. I hardly know how to speak to her, to view her. I have to admit that she frightens me. I don't believe her to be secretly sinister and conniving, quite the opposite. The idea that there is no underlying deception and selfish intent about the woman is a notion foreign, one that mocks me in my certitude and endless petulance. Nay, she doesn't frighten me, except that she makes me afraid that she will shame me. For if this perception of goodness I believe of Gwydra is indeed the truth of Gwydra, then who am I? No hero, certainly. When the snow fell deep this cold winter in Vanguard, the people of Pelennor struggled to retrieve enough wood to keep warm. With the drifts piled high, the forest was not safe for individuals or small groups to venture. So Gwydra, as she has apparently done many times before, held a grand ball in Castle Pelennor, with all invited. All! Every person about the town of Pelennor. And with the great celebration came a feast that lasted for days. And during that time, at Gwydra's behest, Dawson and her soldiers ventured often into the forest and retrieved piles of wood for the folk of Pelennor to take with them as they at last departed the castle. And Gwydra ate with them and danced with them and led them in song. I looked upon her and wished that she were not so atypical a lad, that all the people of Hans, of all the world indeed, could be so blessed to live under the care of such a ruler. She shames the callous heart of the highwaymen. She frightens me because she did something to me. Dame Gwydra made me, at long last, and against all expectation, hope. Hope. She made me hope. She made me believe that the world could change. But hope is not as easy an emotion as is surrender. For that is what I have done, Dame Gwydra has shown me, to my great discomfort. When the stork became the highwayman, the stork surrendered. I care not for the war in the south, so I declare. I cared not for Gwydra's war, so I declared. I fought only because of Gwydra's deception and blackmail. Beyond Caedale and Callan and my own needs, I declared myself removed, uncaring, not responsible. She shames me, and the hope I feel when I look upon her scares me. Who would I be had I been raised in Pelennor instead of Pride? I doubt that the highwaymen would exist, and that is a notion that bothers me profoundly. But how might that persona of the highwaymen have grown in such a climate as Pelennor? Would Father Primugen have treated me as the brothers in Chapel Pride treated the stork? Would Gwydra have allowed it? No, not up here. Up here, even the relationship between Castle Pelennor and Chapel Pelennor is a very different one than I experienced in Pride Town. Back home, the brothers were terrified of the lad and would not go against him even when they knew he was wrong. But here, Primugen and Gwydra are friends, and she supports him in his work, most of all when his work is benefiting the people, the common folk. Both Gwydra and Primugen act as if they serve the folk, and not as if the people were put here as pawns for their pleasure. Perhaps it is the harsh climate of Vanguard, and the simple pragmatism the difficult environment demands. Up here, the folk stand as one, or die alone. Would the common folk suffer the selfishness so typical in the southern lairds and nobles? Would they sit idly by, freezing and dying, while their leaders of castle and chapel hoarded the winter supplies? I doubt they would, but as I reflect on this matter, I realize that I am applying a pragmatism to my observations of character that is unfair to Dame Gwydra. I so clearly see her heart in the way she dances in a snowstorm or sings to the people of Pelennor. She would be a good leader of good heart wherever her holding, and had he grown among the pines of Pelennor, the highwaymen would not exist. And Garibald Wormack would still be alive. Alive and friend to Bran Denard and Senwi. So it is not Gwydra I fear in the end, but the hope she lights in my heart and soul, and the way she forces me to feel responsibility beyond the boundaries of my own needs. Had I known the light that is Gwydra before, I wonder what I might have answered when she came to me with no threat or deception and asked me, for no reason other than the good of the folk of Vanguard, to go north and do battle with ancient Baden. She has shaken my beliefs to the core. Branson Garibald.
We're driving them hard.
Erilus was a nobleman from Pride who had so distinguished himself in the fighting that Bonnegran had given him one of the 10 chariots in his elite team. Bonnegran could only nod above the din of pounding hooves and rolling wheels. They had started to the north on the hunt for the highwayman, as Yezelnik had demanded. That alone had bothered Bonnegran more than a bit, given the highwayman's reputation among the commoners. Word had caught up to them after their departure, though, that King Yezelnik was soon to be engaging the forces of Laird Ethelbert far to the east of Pride, along the western banks of Felidon Bay, the long inlet that separated Hans proper from the large peninsula of the easternmost regions known as the Mantis Arm. Yezelnik had recalled Bonnegran with all speed. And so the good general had followed his orders, wheeling his group of 10 back to the south and then east, rumbling to the limit of the horse's strength along the cobblestone roads. They were getting close, Bonnegran knew, and that was a good thing, for more than a few of the 20 horses drawing the war chariots would need to be replaced.
Smoke in the northeast! Stay east!
Within a half hour, they came upon the stragglers of Yezelnik's rear guard and, they learned, southern flank. Bonnegran pulled his chariot up beside the beleaguered footman.
You are Farmer Grease?
Oh, Laird Bonnegran.
Where is King Yezelnik?
Grease half-heartedly waved generally north, towards smoke on the horizon.
The town in smoke?
Nay, be Milwellis, we're hearing. The king's due north of us. Might even be back to the west a bit.
Bonnegran didn't have to probe further to get the hidden meaning there, that Yezelnik, as usual, was safely to the rear of the fighting.
Can you go to him? Might I be speaking without getting your spear in me chest?
What are you about?
About to die, I'm guessing. Go and tell King Yezelnik, I beg you.
Tell him what?
He's got a spear heading straight east, and the front groups are making great gains. The enemy are falling back before them. None to the south of us. None of us, I mean, guard nor flank. But there's a road there.
Bonnegran looked to the east, then the south, trying to get a feel for the situation. Farmer Grease was a veteran of many battles, as were most of the men of Pride.
Mighty spearmen are the folk of the Mantis Arm, who spend their days harpooning the fishes.
They've crossed the bay.
Aye, Prince Milwellis hit them hard in the north and cut them off from the mainland. He's built a fortress at the north tip of Felidon to keep the men of the peninsula on the peninsula. Bye. They got boats aplenty.
You're being flanked to the south. While the Felidon Bay villagers retreat, their allies from across the bay are sliding in beside you and behind you.
Grease didn't have to answer.
How many? How far west have they pushed? And how far east are the front runners of your surge?
I can't be known, but they're there. They're falling too fast for us. Let us push east and stretch thin. These folk are no strangers to the ways of battle. They've been fighting powries all their lives.
Why are you men back here? If your line advances with all speed, then why are you so far behind?
Farmer Grease pointed down at his foot, which was heavily bandaged but showing blood through the wrap.
All of us here have been taking hits and can't keep up.
And when you heard of the southern flank, you hesitated more.
Grease and many others shifted uncomfortably.
Good fortune that you did, and good fortune that you are rested.
Bonnegran turned to his charioteers.
We go south, and these men will run behind us. We'll cut the enemy off along the road. Your men come in behind us and turn fast to the east. Our enemies will be en route and retreating. So run among them and kill them.
One of them that's already crossed the road.
The chariots will hold the road.
For the Bear of Horns!
He hated that nickname. Hated being compared to some animal. But he couldn't deny its power to rally men. But he surely needed that energy and hope at this time. Flames hungrily ate the thatched roofs, billowing thick black smoke into the air. Men, women, and children rushed about in stark terror as the horsemen weaved through the village, launching torches onto the roofs, launching spears at the pursued, or just running down the smaller ones and trampling them underhoof. Prince Milwellis of Palmaris Town kept his horse running. This village, of no name worth remembering, had sent some men to the north to what, Milwellis still wondered. To parley, to defend. In either case, they had utterly failed, since Milwellis, eager to be the first to Yansinchester, the target city of King Yezelnik's diversion to the coast, just sent his large force swarming over them and into their village. Out of the corner of his eye, Milwellis noted a man darting behind the corner of a building. He kicked his mount into a short gallop, spinning around the corner, spear ready, to find the man huddled with his back against the stone, his hands open, held defensively against his chest and belly.
Oh, please, good sir, please don't kill me. I'm with no one, none other, but just the fisherman I am.
Be at ease, good man.
We're just simple folk.
Then no real loss.
Mirwellis thrust his spear into the man's gut.
I would carve the crest of Palmaristown in your forehead for your treachery against King Yezimik, fool, but I haven't the time.
A large group, moving east to west.
Aralus was perched up in a tree.
Slipping in behind Yeselnik's line as they spearhead east.
Heartbeats?
Hundreds. 500 perhaps.
Bonnegran nodded and motioned his man down from the tree.
You follow as swiftly as you can.
Bonnegran spoke to Grease and the 50 other footmen he had rounded up.
We will turn them and send them running. And the quicker you are among them, the more confusion they will find. So, for your own lives, warriors, run!
As soon as Aralus stepped up into his chariot, Bonnegran set his own off along the road, the other nine quickly sweeping up in his wake. He set his team into a full charge along the last span to the enemy crossing. More than 36 warriors from various villages of the Mantis Arm were within striking distance of the road. Bonnegran's armored team and chariot roared down at the Ethelbert soldiers. Men rushed about wildly and some broke. From the north, where the other nine charioteers similarly pounded into Ethelbert's forces, the 50 footmen howled, running on at full speed. The road was cleared in moments. Bonnegran pulled his team up to the side, took up shield and spear, and leaped away. None could stand before him. All that Bonnegran had hoped came to fruition in short order. The concentration of enemies moving to flank the southern end of Yezelnik's line fell apart almost at once, and those who managed to escape the catastrophe ran back the way they had come, to the east. Bonnegran and his nine fellows gave short chase, launching spears, inciting further terror. Grease and the others swept by.
To your chariots! Those who have already crossed the road will try to strike at us from the west. They are caught alone!
As predicted, the peninsula warriors did come on from the west, trying to break through to secure their reinforcements. But this was Bonnegran, the Bear of Haunts, the hero of pride, the hero of Yezelnik's haunts. Their spears were met by brutal and unforgiving charges of chariots. Not fast enough for one, who caught a spear in the back, and then another who took one in the back of the thigh, and then a third whom Bonnegran hit with a flying tackle, burying him in the dirt.
I surrender! It's not my war! Children!
Bonnegran held his slash, stood up straight, and hoisted the man to his feet beside him.
All quarter! These two are men of haunts!
Hail, King Yezelnik!
Bonnegran scowled at his prisoner.
Hail, King Yezelnik!
Bonnegran nodded grimly and pulled him back toward the road. Soon after, Grease and the others returned.
We ran them off for good! And many are down!
Well done. Now we turn west, and quickly. Those out there are cut off from their allies and families, and they know it.
How many?
It matters not. They'll have no heart for the fight.
Proud of his men and glad that he had again ably led them, Bonnegran left the western fields of victory, driving for Yezelnik's position in the center of his extended line. As it seemed that the fighting had ebbed, all warriors he passed on his way told him that the enemy had retreated to the fortified coastal towns. Bonnegran eased his pace so that his charioteers and footmen and their 100 prisoners, taken in those western fields with hardly a fight, as he had predicted, could somewhat pace him. He wanted them to arrive in view of King Yezelnik soon after he and the unpredictable young nobleman had begun their conversation. In dealing with Yezelnik, Bonnegran knew it was always wise to somehow gain an advantage. He found the young king basking in luxury in a grand tent.
Ah, but the great bear has come. I expected your arrival this morning. You were seen not far to the west many hours ago. I told you not to tarry.
I happened upon a situation that needed to be addressed for the good of my king. I had not the time to ride to you and to correct the breach in your defenses.
Breach?
The success of your maneuver at your southern flank was obviously unanticipated. Huzzah for the men of Delaval, so obviously eager to please their new king. The Peninsular warriors made a fatal mistake. They tried to flank your spearheading advance by secretly advancing to the south of the southern end of your line. But they stretched themselves too thin. They are more used to fighting on the sea, methinks, or at the seacoast.
They heard a commotion outside the tent, and Bonnegrand knew that his men had arrived with the prisoners.
They were desperate against your bold gambit in the south, and so they erred.
He led Yezelnik and the other commanders present to the tent flap, coming in view of Bonnegrand's forces leading the long line of captives.
What is the meaning of this?
It means that our enemy's gambit has failed.
Yezelnik led Bonnegrand and the others from the tent to come in view of the new arrivals, Milwellis and his forces.
They have raised a line from the neck of the mantis arm to here. They have struck fear into the hearts of the fools who would oppose my reign. Never again will the men, what few remain of the Felidon Bay village, take up weapons in support of Ethelbert. The region is nearly secured. Do you notice anything absent among Milwellis's ranks?
Bonnegrand looked hard, but found no answers to the curious and curiously leading question.
You did not hear of my edict.
Bonnegrand looked at him with puzzlement.
The days, the months, nay, the years of merciful war are ended.
Merciful war?
Merciful. The reason this uprising of Ethelbert's continues is because of false mercy. Only when the cost of their choices is clear to those who will oppose me will they cease in their folly.
What would you have me do, my king?
Tell me what is missing from Prince Milwellis's grand entrance.
Bonnegrand scratched his head, not wanting to answer.
Prisoners, the day of false mercy is ended. We do not offer quarter.
Bonnegrand swallowed hard, his mind whirling through the myriad of troublesome implications of such a ruthless edict. Why would any of those loyal to Ethelbert ever surrender with such a fate before them? He wanted to speak out, to explain to King Yezelnik that his own victory that very day would have been hard to achieve and would have cost him dearly had not the disoriented and fearful warriors of the Mantis Arm surrendered in those western fields. Surrendered despite outnumbering Bonnegrand's forces 2-1 because they knew there was no long-term solution to their dilemma.
Execute them!
I took them fairly, upon my word.
My word overcomes your word.
Yes, my king. But you cannot take from me my honor if you wish me to remain valuable to your cause.
Are you refusing me?
No, my king. I am asking your deference in this matter.
Yezelnik stared at him hard.
Just kill them quickly and be done with it. My liege, allow me.
Prince Milwellis stared at Bonnegrand as he spoke, as if this request was surely elevating him against the champion of pride, who many believed to be Milwellis's primary competitor for the favor of King Yezelnik.
As a reward for my efforts in the north.
Yezelnik motioned for Milwellis to proceed. The fearsome prince of Palmaristown eagerly climbed back upon his horse and motioned for a few of his most deserving and trusted comrades to follow.
It would seem the situation here is well in hand. I expect that you are not needed after all. Take your charioteers and return to the hunt of the highwaymen.
Bonnegrand gave a curt bow and spun away, rushing to his chariot and motioning his nine to follow quickly. Bonnegrand snapped his reins and sent his team charging away, hoping to be far from this place before the screams of terror and agony filled the air. A futile hope. Branson and Kaydale stood arm in arm by the prow of Lady Dreamer as she bounced and splashed her way through the springtime swells. The sky above loomed dark and foreboding, and some drizzle had filled the morning air, but Dawson McKeague had assured them and all the other nervous stiff-leggers that it wasn't much of a storm.
Just a pall. Worse on the spirits than on the Lady Dreamer.
The couple knew his words to be sincere. After all, Dame Gwydra herself was aboard. Dawson would never take a chance with the life of his beloved Lady of Vanguard.
Chapel of Bale, what will you say to them when we arrive?
Nothing, unless they ask. Then I will ask them why they found the need to torment my family. What threat was Brother Denard truly? Or are they afraid to learn, as Father de Gilb was so fearful of the barbarians that he would kill them all before speaking with him honestly?
Oh, they will welcome you with open arms then.
They should hear the truth if they ask.
You would not have waited for that invitation a few months ago.
Father Primogen understands, and accepted Cormac despite great risk.
As he spoke, Branson glanced back across the deck to the sails of the vessels trailing them. DeGilb and his people were on one, with the notable exception of Brother Giavno. Giavno sailed on Lady Dreamer, with Father Primujan and his closest advisors, including Brother Jean, and with Cormac and Milkela as well.
Not so great a risk for the father. Not with Dame Guidra by his side.
This meeting at Chapel Abel will be interesting, even for me, though I hardly care for the affairs of the Order of Abel.
The Order of Blessed Abel.
Branson rolled his eyes.
But you would still offer your opinion if asked.
Your own mother was thrown in a sack with venomous snakes, then hanged by her wrists and left to die.
Samwise, Justice, not a Bellican.
The Brothers of Chapel Pride sat silent at her trial, at her sentencing, and at her intended execution. And those brothers were more than passive in the death of Garibald Womack.
I did not mean to upset you.
It is the way of a difficult world.
Where will we live?
If Dame Guidra's writ is accepted, anywhere we choose.
And where will that be?
Pride Town. Home.
I would like that.
So would Callan, I think.
And Branson, who offers it out of his boundless generosity?
It was my home on the lake. Although I am pained by the ending Garibald found, I think he would like it if we built our home there, in his memory. Also, if Yezelnik is laird, I would like it all the more simply because I know that Dame Guidra's writ will bring frustration to the dimwit every day.
And how many times will you rob him?
No more. Dame Guidra says that all is forgiven. That is our freedom. Our time in flight from pursuing soldiers is ended.
Have you thought of becoming a father?
She looked up at him and smiled, then slowly nodded. The next hug was the tightest yet, and the warmest.
He uses Laird Delaval's own seal overlaid with a Y.
Father Artelevan held the rolled parchment to arm's length so that his failing eyes could make out the insignia.
He names himself Yeselnik Delaval, King of Homs.
Master Riandu was the courier of the parchment.
He would, wouldn't he? And before I read this, good brother, would you desire to forewarn me of anything?
King Yeselnik is in a foul mood. His beloved uncle was murdered, after all. Is there something you fear, father?
Artolevan looked around at his attendant, Brother Pinauer, who seemed equally sadly amused.
We had a bit of a disagreement with Prince Milwellus of Palmaris Town regarding our role in the disposition of prisoners. I expect that the young man of hot humor complained to King Yezelnik, who no doubt wishes to chastise us for our impertinence.
If he could think past the gains of the next day, he would understand Milwellus's posture to be one of disaster. I have little affection for the cold-hearted Prince of Palmaris Town, I must admit.
More than I.
The events in the south move quickly. Since the murder of Laird Delaval, Laird Ethelbert tried to assault Pride Town. He was turned back by the brave men of Pride and a great champion whom I name as a personal friend. The battle has turned vicious and furious. King Yeselnik will see this through whatever the cost.
Father Artelevan held up a hand for him to pause, then broke the seal, unrolled the parchment, and began reading. Almost immediately his jaw went slack, his eyes went wide, and he began to shake his head. He passed it off to Pinauer, who truly seemed as if he had been slapped in the face as he read it.
King Yezelnik demands the release of all the Delaval prisoners held at Chapel Abel and at any other chapels. And he wishes us to serve as executioners for those captives of Laird Ethelbert's army.
Impossible!
Artolevan thrust the scroll into his hand, and he couldn't deny the meaning of the words on the parchment.
What are we to tell our brethren at Chapel Entel in Ethelbert, or at any other of our chapels in holdings under the domain of Laird Ethelbert?
To barricade their doors and pray.
This is insanity.
It is the unbridled vengeance of a man answerable to no one but himself. The old graves of Hans are filled with the results of such folly. Speak freely, brother from Pride. What do you think of King Yezelnik's designs?
I must reflect on it, father.
Truly?
Aye.
Be at ease, brother. We are all caught by surprise. We must all reflect. I will write and seal my response for you to take on your return to Father Jerrick and Chapel Pride.
Thank you, Father Artelevan. There is one more matter, though I hesitate to even mention it in light of the gravity of the previous issue.
Come out with it. I am old, but my heart is strong enough for your surprises.
There is a man traveling the roads of Haunts. His name is Branson Garibond, a man of my home holding.
Behind Artelevan, Pinhour shuffled nervously.
He is known as the Highwayman, a great warrior. But he also travels in the guise of an awkward and damaged man, often called the Stork.
Yes?
He is charged with the murder of Laird Delavore. It was his sword that slew the great man.
That news, of course, confused the two monks of Chapel La Belle. As far as they knew, the Stork was still in Vanguard, a long way from Delaval City. They both did well to hide that fact, however.
If you find him and capture him, King Yeselnik will be pleased, no doubt.
You are pained by the prospect. You know this man?
For many years.
And you believe that he killed Laird Delaval?
He is capable of great anger. It is not unexpected, given the tragedy of his life. The evidence seems strong, though I am surprised that Branson would go to the lengths of murder. I do not know.
He was seen west of here, along the road to Palmaris Town. Though that was before the onset of winter. I have heard reports that he went to Vanguard.
Those reports must have been in error.
Or it wasn't his sword.
I will report that back to King Yeselnik as well.
Father Artelevan let that sit for a few moments before nodding.
Is there anything more?
No.
Good. You have given me more than enough, I'm sure. Allow me to reflect on King Yeselnik's demands so that I might properly fashion a response. But do tell me, how fares Father Jerrick?
No better, no worse.
Your service in his stead is not unnoticed, brother. With the accidental death of Master Bathalays, the chapel will likely fall to you in full.
Riandu shifted from foot to foot, too overwhelmed to reply.
Father Jerrick is an old and dear friend of mine. I am glad that he trained such competent successors. I am sure that your work would please him, as it pleases us. Go with grace, good young Master Riandu.
Riandu quickly took his leave.
You need to reflect?
On whether or not it would be politic of me to publicly spank this young twit who thinks himself King of Haunts.
What are we to do?
We are not to free the prisoners sent to us in good faith by Laird Ethelbert and his commanders. To do so would be to betray our word to the people we serve. And of course, the brothers are not going to act as executioners for a young king drunk with power. The Order of Abel was founded as a gentle alternative to the vicious Samhasts. We have won over Hans's people with the utility of our blessed gemstones, true, but also with our determination to reduce the suffering of men, not to play as the Samhasts in inflicting misery. This is who we are. We are not murderers and executioners. This is madness. Tell no one of this edict.
Of course, Father.
Oh, what a week of ecstasy and agony. To hear the grand news of Dame Guidra's victory and now to see the truth of King Yeselnik laid bare.
Perhaps Dame Guidra will aid us in our conflict with King Yeselnik. Surely she will not agree with his brutal tactics.
How far out is Lady Dreamer?
3 days, perhaps 2. The weather has held across the gulf, we believe. She departed only 4 days behind the advance ship. No one is faster across the dark waters than Dawson McKeague.
Write our response immediately. Advise King Yeselnik, all proper respect in the use of his formal title, that we will take his edict under advisement.
Delay.
Better that than to invite immediate war. We will indeed enlist Dame Guidra in this trouble, should she be willing.
Then the longer we take in replying, the better.
No, write it immediately. Not with our decision, but with a promise that our decision will be forthcoming in short order. I want Master Riandu as far from here as quickly as possible, before he is even made aware of the impending visit of the victorious Lady of Vanguard. Riandu is spoken of in the highest terms, and he seems a man of mature and moderate temperament, despite the unfortunate incident that led to the loss of Master Bathalay's. But I'll not have our true feelings revealed beyond this room.
Yes, Father.
Let us hope that Dame Gwydra offers a solution.
Perhaps the solution will come from within, from the heart of Father Otto Levin, who is closest to the spirit of Blessed Abel.
Master Riandu left Chapel Abel the next day, bound for his home of pride, and bearing Father Otto Levin's rolled and sealed response, which, of course, wasn't really a reply at all. Brother Pinauer spent most of that day and the next two at Chapel Abel's high wall, staring out at the gulf. When at last the sails of Vanguard ships appeared in the distance, he rushed to Father Otto Levin and then down through the winding tunnels and stairways descending through the hundreds of feet of rocky cliff upon which sat their home. Much of Chapel Abel lay within that mountain now, as the monks continually fashioned the deep limestone caves into chambers grand and humble. From the lowest chambers, the two entered a long tunnel, its sides sculpted like the ridges of a clamshell, its air thick with brine and torch smoke. The fortified back door of Chapel Abel, hundreds of feet below the main structures, opened onto a small beach in a deep, secluded bay. With Lady Dreamer clearly in sight, Pinauer rushed along the wharf past the brothers, gathering up lines. He spotted Dawson, who often docked here. Beside him, to his sincere relief, stood Gwydra herself. The young monk felt a sense of great elation at that, relief that she, this woman who might be the only hope against the insanity of Yezelnik, had indeed made the journey south from Vanguard.
Praise Abel, for he must have guided her heart.
Pinauer looked back to the approaching ship, and his smile became a look of concern. For moving up beside Gwydra came another distinctive figure, dressed in black silk.
Aye, but there's that highwayman fellow. We should put him on a boat right back to Vanguard for his own sake. Before Yezelnik hangs him, I mean.
The ship moored alongside the long wharf then, monks and sailors fast tying her off, and soon the impressive procession moved down the plank to join Pinauer and the other monks working the docks. Pinauer was glad to see his old friend, Father Primujan, disembark beside Gwydra.
All news from the north is good.
And so we have brought an eclectic entourage. Brothers of the Order and a priestess of Alpinador, a man of legend.
She looked at Jameson Sequin, whose name was known along the southern coast of the Gulf of Corona, then at Branson.
And one in the making.
And of course, the hero Vanguard in all of Haunts. The lady who has renewed hope in our order with her victory over ancient Bardin. It is a grand day in Chapel Abel, indeed.
A day of hope.
Every village along the Falaiden Bay is ablaze.
General Kieran Howen reported to Laird Ethelbert.
We will find no allies from that direction, and the villages of the Mantis Arm have been cut off from the mainland.
They have many boats.
They have been battered, Laird. I doubt they'll come forth and leave their families to the mercy of merciless Malwellis of Palmaris Town.
But Yezelnik has broken off and moved back inland.
Leaving Prince Melwillis of Palmaris and his vile forces free run of the inner coast. Now the both of them, Yezelnik from the northwest and Melwillis from the north, would seem to have entered into a race to see who might arrive at our gates first.
A good try, then.
I am not yet ready to surrender Ethelbert Dos Entel to the putrid Yezelnik.
Surrender? Not Yezelnik or Milwellis will see the streets of my Entel, unless it is through the eyes of a disembodied head.
A good try, you said. You speak as if we have lost.
And we have, though we have stung our enemies profoundly. I fear that we haven't the resources to again march north and challenge for Hans. Nor would I deign to put the people of the holdings through a continuation of this.
Your men fight because they love you. You fought not out of self-gain, but because you were the only one who could slow the thievery of Laird Delaval. Most men of Hans understand this.
You are too kind, my old friend. And I do not doubt your loyalty or love, or that of many others like Mirik and the warriors of my holding. But for many of the others, the men and women of the other holdings, whose lairds decided that my gold was better than Delaval's, there is only misery and blood and agony and death. They hold my name no higher than the name of Delaval, or Yezelnik now. They fight because they are told to fight. They die because they cannot escape. They hate us all, no doubt, and hate their own miserable lives almost enough to make death a welcome alternative.
Kieran Howen didn't disagree, but the look on his face was one of utter dejection.
We are not surrendering, and not Yezelnik or Milwellis will march into Ethelbert Dosentel. That much I promise. We are now the great biting turtles of the Belt and Buckle's End Stones. We close ranks and fight from positions where 10 men might fend off 100. And whenever our enemies carelessly venture near our point, we bite at them and teach them pain. And we are more than a huddled turtle. We have vipers to send forth, the most venomous group.
And when the vipers poison the attackers and send them reeling, do we march forth and drive our enemies before us?
Eager for another try at the Bear of Haunts?
A worthy opponent, so yes.
I do not like battling that one. I fought beside him and Laird Priday those years ago.
I remember it well. Would that Bonnegrant, Laird Bonnegran, I am told, had decided to ally with Laird Ethelbert.
Would that Laird Priday had kept his loins and that his life. I thought to name Priday to my line. He was a good man, but he lost his ability to continue his line, his balls taken by a powry. Still, I blame myself for not acting forcefully enough to enlist him and his important holding. A holding become all the more important by the rise of the Bear of Haunts.
To the vipers, then.
Are you ready, my prince?
Dimitri Reitu held back his obviously eager horse. The scouts ahead had reported confusion and terror in the ranks of their enemies, with most fleeing south. This next charge, back to the east and the Mirianic, would take the rocky hill anchoring the southern bank of a large bay just north of the city of Ethelbert Dosentel. That strong position would ensure that no ships could put in and offload soldiers right behind their lines, and would also serve as a fine vantage point for the short run to Ethelbert City. Milwellis, victorious all through the morning and all the day before, beamed with glee.
King Yezelnik is still 2 days from Ethelbert City, and will be at her gates by evening.
Is that a bad thing, my prince?
Harcourt was another of the commanders. He was the oldest of the generals who had set out from Palmaris Town with Milwellis those weeks before. He had also fought with Banle Maris, Milwellis's father, in the Powry Wars and in many sea battles when Banle Maris had seized control of the western reaches of the Gulf of Corona, thus ensuring Palmaris Town's place among the most highly prized and important ports in all of Hunts. Milwellis looked at him curiously, not understanding how the prospects before them could possibly be considered as such. Still, his father had made it clear to him to heed well the advice of the veteran Harcourt.
You fear that I will outshine the king? Do you think me impolitic?
No, of course not. And you have earned all honors. Your march south will be remembered throughout Haunts for generations to come. Already the bards are writing the songs of Milwellis's great victories, and never will a Palmaris Town ship be out of the reach of a friendly port, since you control them all now, from the river through the southern coast of the Gulf and down the length of the Mantis Arm. All glory to Milwellis. Young prince, you've done your father proud, and no easy task, that.
But
King Yezelnik is new to the throne, and the throne itself is new. As such, he is no doubt unsure.
Unsure and insecure. So we are faced with a dilemma. I desire credit to Palmaris Town's brave warriors for the taking of Ethelbert Dosentel, but I fear to walk too tall above Hans's new king, to whom my father has pledged fealty. What am I to do?
The way he had asked, grinning from ear to ear, told them that he had already sorted out the solution, and so the knights just glanced at each other with confident nods and waited for Milwellis to explain.
I will take my leave of you now, riding west to King Yezelnik's line and camp. You proceed as we had planned. You will have no trouble smashing to the city's gate, and when I arrive, King Yezelnik will find his path clear to victory. Ethelbert Dosentel, the greatest prize of all, presented to him by my minions. All glory to Yezelnik for leading the march into the city, but all the men of the king's many holdings will know that it was Palmaris Town and Milwellis who truly won the day.
Aye, but your father has raised a son who will well lead Palmaris Town and more.
With a stern look, Milwellis dismissed the others. As they walked their mounts away, he brought his horse up very close beside Harcourt.
You find me too forward in front of the others?
I have never heard such compliments flowing from the lips of Harcourt. I find them unsettling.
Perhaps you have never deserved them before.
Milwellis sat up straight as if the man had slapped him.
I promised your father that I would counsel you and protect you. And protect you particularly from yourself. This is not an easy business. Oh, killing our enemies is simple enough, and a task you've learned well.
But the politics of it?
Ah, trickier by far. And more so given that our new king is a man of exceeding vanity and unworldliness. Would that Laird Delaval had known an heir as worthy as Milwellis.
You say so only because you fear you have angered me.
I speak only because I do not fear to anger you. My loyalty is to Laird Panlamaris first, and I was fighting beside him before you were born. He charged me with fulfilling his own role beside you, to criticize when needed, and to counsel always.
And to praise?
Only when deserved. As now, there are two men in particular making names in this war. Yourself and Bonnegran, the champion of pride.
He is a peasant.
The warriors love him, and Yezulnik has named him Laird of Pride.
That does not change his peasant blood.
And the warriors love you, and you have the advantage, young prince, for they fear you as well. All who watched the burning of the Felidon villages understand well the severity of Prince Melwellus, and fear is a tool that will serve you well in the days after Ethelbert's certain defeat. As King Yezulnik sorts out his new and vast domain, he will wisely and warily defer to you.
All Hans's coast for Palmaristown, eh?
That is your father's greatest wish, one that you have made possible. Even likely.
My choice in going now to Yezulnik. Wise.
Brilliant beyond your years.
Ride with me.
With honor.